Welcome, everyone, to episode 285 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today, now that we've passed December 15th, we're going to be focused on trades, and we're going to focus specifically today on which teams need to make a move as buyers before the trade deadline. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. Happy belated birthday. So how drunk were you?
You know, I surprisingly feel okay this morning, which I did not see for myself. But nice. We've had a couple big events lately, so I think I learned moderation is key when you are in your 30s and can no longer pretend like you're in college. But thank you all the same. There's a new bar in Nashville that's like just massive. It has duck pin bowling and old arcade games. So we went there, watched the Heat be cowards and play zone defense for an entire game, which was terrible. But otherwise, very fun day. Also saw Knives Out yesterday, which if you guys have not gone to see it yet, go see that instead of Star Wars, apparently.
Yeah, I watched Star Wars yesterday.
Did you? Is it as terrible as everyone says?
No, I'm terrible and terrible. There are definitely reviews out there that are a little bit more harsh on it than I am. But
oh, okay.
I didn't leave the theater thinking, oh my god, this is the greatest thing ever. There are moments where I was like, okay, this is pretty awesome, and then there were definitely moments where I was like, oh god, this is horrendous and atrocious and all of the negative things. Like, so on IMDb, I gave it 5
out of 10.
Yeah.
Oh my god. I'm going to see it tomorrow. We're not going to give any spoilers or anything, but yeah, I mean, if you've been following just even the consensus around the movie, it seems like is it the most disappointing of the new ones?
So here's the thing. I wasn't actually that critical of The Last Jedi as many others were.
Neither was I. I loved The Last Jedi.
Well, I didn't love it. I haven't loved any of the three, you know, sequels here, to be honest with you. They've been very middling movies, all of them. And I feel this one was just, like, there were some moments, again, where I was like, oh god, this is atrocious. So maybe it's the weakest one, but I don't think it's, like, a major step down in quality from the last two. I mean, I feel they're very much the same. Like, when they come out on Blu-ray and I watch them back-to-back-to-back, I'm not going to see, like, a major difference in quality, I think.
Okay. Well, that has me a little more excited to see it, but I'm still very skeptical.
But, like, you can't satisfy that audience, though.
No, I know. That's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, I binged every movie beforehand.
Yeah.
So I was watching two Star Wars movies a day for 5 days.
Wow.
And you know, I mean, the first three, like from 77 and from 80 and 83.
Yeah.
Like they still stand out, even though like the acting is subpar and the special effects are really not what we know today. Right. It just had a charm, and it's almost like a romance in a way. Like you just feel so acclimated to it, and you feel like so safe regarding it. And then, you know, the Phantom Menace thing is that's still, to me, that's still the worst of all.
Yes,
of them.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, anyway. Go see Knives Out if you want to actually see a good movie this week, because that was
highly I've been looking forward to that one as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's get into actual basketball talk now, Mort, now that we've been sad about the murder of our favorite franchise, childhood franchise. Today we're going to talk mostly just teams that need to make a move, that need to add something before the trade deadline. So who jumps to mind right away for you?
In terms of buyers, the one team that I'm looking at right now, undoubtedly, is Milwaukee. And not for the same reasons necessarily as everyone is pointing out in terms of, oh, we need a secondary ball handler and all that. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just worried about the injury bug a little bit. They have so much depth, but at the same time, you can't really afford to lose, like, Chris Middleton for an extended period of time if it's going into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And you know, Eric Bledsoe, while not a great shooter, does add a secondary element of a supporting cast to Giannis. Like, he can drop 20 if need be. Mm-hmm. But I think they need one more guy. I think they need one more guy who can take some decisions on his own when Giannis sits. And I realize it comes off so dumb because they're 24-4 and yeah. They've been just blowing through the entire league and have gone through an 18-game winning streak. I get it.
Yeah.
But they need that one tiny addition of a good player who can just round out the rotation, and then I'm there.
Mm-hmm. What are you thinking, like a Drew Holiday type or more minor than that?
Oh, you remember my DM right there. Okay. Yeah. So the New Orleans Pelicans obviously did not get off to the start that they wanted to.
Right.
And they are, you know, we're going to have a different podcast doing like the sellers thing. Yeah. And they're going to be on there. Yeah. And Drew Holiday is apparently fair game in trade discussions. Like, they'll probably get a haul for him, so I don't know how realistic it is for him to end up in Milwaukee.
Right.
But I think, given that the rumor mill right now are basically trying to force either Chris Paul or Kyle Lowry towards Milwaukee, I just think Drew Holiday makes so much more sense, both from an age perspective and a you know, playing style perspective.
Definitely, yeah.
So, if they were going for another... none of these guys are top tier level guys, but if they're going for someone in that quality range, they should definitely prioritize Holiday. And the question is, like, what do you give up in that trade? I don't know what you give up. Had you kept Malcolm Brogdon, that would have been a pretty big asset to move.
Right. Yeah. So Mark Stein of the New York Times is the one who said Holiday is indeed available. It would surely cost a significant amount to pry him away, but this is a notable change in status given how unavailable Holiday was last season. David Griffin came out and immediately shot this down. So I think it's what you said. They're open for offers just because there are very few players in the NBA that you should not be open to offer. Like, Giannis is not up for grabs, or he should not be, but even a second tier star, and you're supposed to take offers for most guys in the league. So their willingness to at least listen is notable. But yeah, again, it comes down to you have Eric Bledsoe for salary matching. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you're going to have to give up Dante DiVincenzo, DJ Wilson, maybe. A ton of picks, I guess.
Pat Connaughton, because he's a bargain at 1.7, but he's going to be a free agent as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to find. I guess you would have to do Bledsoe and Ilyasova just for the salary matching and then throw in. But at that point, you're going to have to. Either New Orleans is waiving players or they're going to have to send guys back as well. It's hard to create deals with a ton of players just from the salary matching side. So
right,
that's always something to keep in mind. I am having people send me nine player three team trades, and it's this is never gonna happen. It's
just these things are complicated. A one-on-one trade is hard enough.
Right. It's just these things rarely happen where you include that many players at one time, or if you do, it's got to be mutually beneficial to both sides. So, I could understand the Pelicans at least listening on Drew. I don't know that Milwaukee in particular has what it takes to get a guy like him.
Right. I agree with that. I still think they need someone. It doesn't really have to be someone of that skill set necessarily. I mentioned Drew just because right now the rumor mill are mentioning Paul. And, right. Yeah. So, I would be fine with the Bucks acquiring just another, borderline starting caliber player.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really care necessarily what position that is, as long as it's a guy who can, make proper reads and take good decisions when the ball is in his hands.
Yeah.
But I also wouldn't, here's the thing. If Milwaukee walks out of the trade deadline having made no trades whatsoever, there's not going to be – I'm not going to sit there and go, oh, they screwed the pooch. Like, no. It's like, they're still a championship contender, a top-tier NBA team. I think the only reason I'm looking at that and I'm kind of wondering, like, how far can they go is because the West is just so strong. Mm-hmm. There's so many teams there that could come up and challenge them in like, the finals.
Yeah.
If I want Milwaukee to get, like, a proper shot, I just need one more guy.
Yeah. And preferably someone who doesn't disappear in the playoffs, like Eric Bledsoe every year.
Part of that. And also, like, so Brook Lopez, I love him, mm-hmm. but I don't know. I don't really know what he is, like, right now.
Yeah.
He was last year and this year again, like, he's taking a lot of threes and he's blocking shots. Like, I love the defense and mm-hmm. I love the fact that he can space the floor, but he's hitting 29% from downtown, 38% overall. Like, he's averaging less than 10 points a game and he's taking up a ton of cap space. I probably want just a little bit more stability. So I know I said I wouldn't really put a priority on a certain position, mm-hmm. but if they got a guy who could be versatile and play multiple positions, then and that could allow, you know, Giannis to play a little bit more center, perhaps. I wouldn't hate it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you in thinking they could use an upgrade. They don't necessarily need one, but
right.
I agree that it's like I would like to see them, you know, just continue adding, because we're not going to fall into the trap, at least not yet, of, you know, like the ESPN, like the only thing we talk about with Milwaukee is Giannis's free agent clock in 2021. Like, Milwaukee is 24-4 right now. Let's talk, you know, Giannis is the leading candidate for MVP. Right. Let's focus on them being, you know, the favorite in the East right now. That's the story with Milwaukee this season. Giannis's free agency can wait. But that is in the back of your mind, especially if they don't make a move at the deadline, they get knocked out before the finals, you know, then that drumbeat starts getting a little louder, especially seeing what Brogdon's doing in Indiana right now. Like,
right.
They could have kept him. They didn't because of the luxury tax. That doesn't reflect well moving forward. And, you know, Giannis probably has that in the back of his mind as well. So do they make a move to get, you know, are they willing to pay the tax? Are they able to add another big name that fits well with this core moving forward, you know, to convince Giannis, like, yep, this is my home 2021 and beyond? That's definitely something they need to consider. But again, you know, when you're 24-4, you're not talking about blowing up this team. Like, they're very good as is. They don't need to like overhaul their starting five necessarily.
Can I read you just an insane stat that I just realized right now?
Yeah.
On a per 36 minute scale, over the past two seasons, Giannis has gone up 10 points and 5 rebounds on a per 36 minute.
Yeah, he's okay.
He was at 26 points and 10 rebounds when he was 23 years old, which is like very, very good numbers.
Sure.
His per 36 is 36.5 points and 15 rebounds.
That's wild. He's just outrageous.
Oh man. I look, that this is like reading like a video game box score. He has a PER of 34.6, which is the highest ever. And I kind of feel like this is totally sustainable for the rest of the year.
Right. I know nothing he's doing feels like a fluke. It's just like he's gotten this good. And he's only going to get better.
And he's even having like a terrible year shooting free throws. Like, if he gets a handle of that, like, it's over. But just having one more guy just so it doesn't really fall all the way back on Giannis, that would be good. And that's not just like belittle Chris Middleton's contribution. Like, you and I are Middleton homers.
Of course. But the loss against Dallas did kind of at least put the concern on display with Milwaukee, where it's like, all right, you can let Giannis get his. You know, he's going to get 40. That's fine. But if you shut down everyone else and just let him eat, it's like, well, where is that reliable second option? It could be Middleton some nights. It could be Bledsoe some nights. But Giannis is the one guy who you can pencil in. For sure, this guy's going to get his.
Right.
Do they have that second guy where it's like, you know, Middleton was 4 of 12 for 9 points against a Mavericks team without Luka Doncic.
Right. Like, Giannis doesn't have a LeBron James or an Anthony Davis alongside him, like LeBron right. James and Anthony Davis have right. those guys alongside right. him. So, and I wonder if that's what it comes down to. Like, you need, like, maybe not a top-tier guy, but a tier B guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think they should definitely look around. I don't think they should make a panic trade. I don't think yeah. they should overpay. Yeah. It's just a matter of, is something out there? Maybe a team is just willing to sell off pieces to go into a rebuild or something. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a deal to be had out there that makes sense. Like, go for it. That's fine.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, don't panic trade for Kevin Love.
No. God, no.
So, like, I've seen that floating around Twitter just a little bit. And I was like, no, don't like it. Stay away.
Well, speaking of Kevin Love, I feel like that's a good way to transition into the Portland Trailblazers. Since yes. they are oftentimes the team's most cited in Kevin Love trade discussions. He grew up in the Portland area. He apparently wants to go back there, according to Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer.
Yep.
Here's my thing with Portland. You've got CJ and Dame signed through, I believe, 2023-2024 already, right? So you're not
correct,
gonna have...
and Dame actually until 2025.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a player option. Yeah. 54.
It million. Actually, yeah. It doesn't seem like it. It seems like there are no options in that deal.
Oh, really? All right. Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm
looking at Basketball Reference. Either way, it's like, even if it is a player option, like, he's gonna pick it up because it's for $54.2 million in a single season. So
right. That's
yes.
Yeah. So those guys are under contract for the next half decade.
Correct.
So you're not going to have a ton of cap space at all. And then, you know, like, Whiteside and Bazemore both come off the books after this year. You've got Nurkic on a very reasonable deal for the next couple mm-hmm. of years, which is great. But if you're adding a third star or ostensible star, as in Kevin Love's case, that's your last big bullet. So yes. you better be sure you're adding the right bullet. And I don't think Kevin Love is that guy anymore.
No, I mean, he is a complimentary player in the sense that he's not an all-star anymore. So right. he would like balance out the roster in the sense that, you know, now you actually have, outside of having two very dominant backcourt players, you will have a frontcourt player who can produce and shoot and rebound and do a lot of different things mm-hmm. and even initiate the offense, which I really think they need. But defensively, man.
Yeah.
This is where it just comes back to haunt them so much. Like, Dame... Right. He's improved, CJ's improved, but neither of them are world beaters defensively. Love is just problematic on that end. Mm-hmm. Yusuf Nurkic, you could argue they would be better next year when Nurkic is, like, back fully healthy and whatnot.
Right, and Zach Hopefully. Collins, too.
Yeah, and Zach Collins.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I just, if that's the final bullet, I agree with you. I don't think Love is necessarily the move to go to.
Right.
But then you also have to ask yourself, like, what's the alternative here? Because they're probably not going to have a lot of cap space moving forward either way. Like, using these expiring contracts in Hassan Whiteside and Ken Bazemore, like, you need to get something. Mm-hmm. And if Kevin Love is the best you can get, are you kind of forced to do it?
See, my concern with Love is definitely the defense. I mean, he's got 3 years and $91.5 million after this year on his contract. So... Right. You are financially locked into a Dame, CJ, Kevin Love core moving forward. The defense is just going to be atrocious for 3 years. But also, if you're adding Love, what does that do? I mean, hopefully Nurkic comes back at some point this year, looks like his old self, is totally fine. Next year, hits the ground running. Like, knock on wood, that's the case. What does that mean for Zach Collins, though? Because Zach Collins is ostensibly your power forward of the future. So if you're adding Love, that means one of those guys, I mean, presumably Zach Collins, is going to the bench. And sure, you could, you know, just run a three-man front court of those three guys.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that you necessarily want to commit yourself to burying Zach Collins. Because, you know, because Kevin Love is under contract for three more years, you're effectively saying, like, I'm closing off the pathway for... I mean, they're closing off the pathway for Zach Collins to be our starting power forward. We're about to pay Kevin Love $30 million to be a sixth man.
I mean, maybe I actually think I'm okay with just letting Zach Collins kind of develop behind Love as long as he gets the minutes. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think like the starting position is all that matters. Like, you just basically nailed it. You can run a three-man rotation up front, which would work because Collins can back up both positions.
Right.
So you could more or less pencil him for like 28, 30 minutes a night, which shouldn't be a problem. So like the development minutes are going to be there. The opportunities are going to be there. He's just not going to start. And I think if you sit him down, he seems very reasonable, Zach, at least. I mean, all I have to judge that on is like interviews and stuff. But he does seem like he's a very reasonable person. Mm-hmm. So maybe you sit him down and you go, you know what? Like, you have Kevin Love in front of you. You can learn a lot from him in terms of passing, shooting, reading angles and all of that. Like, take the next couple of years. You're going to get the minutes. Then when Love, you know, enters like maybe the final year, or he's on his way out, or we found a trade or whatever, like, then you're our guy. I don't know. Like, I don't think we should get stuck necessarily on the whole starting perspective as long as you get the minutes.
Yeah. I think if I'm Portland, I'm going after Danilo Gallinari before I even consider Kevin Love.
No, yeah. Well, he's by far the most preferable target, but the thing is, he also needs to be re-signed this summer. Right.
Well, I think that's almost a benefit for Portland, because if you're committed to Collins moving forward, you can bring in Gallinari this season to save the season or whatever, and then you can make that decision in July. And if you don't want to lock into Gallinari, then you're fine. You're not going to have a ton of cap space, but you'll have a little bit. It looks like they have $94.6 million in guaranteed salary on their books. So the cap's supposed to be, I believe, $116 million. You know, you'll have in the ballpark of $15 million. Acquiring him gives you his bird rights, so you can go over the cap to re-sign him. I just think he's the better player and the better fit at this point.
Like, no, he is, but he can also just leave for nothing, even if you want to retain him.
Yeah, but I mean, offer him a competitive salary, and is he like maybe, you know, getting out of OKC, like he could, you could talk to him and be like, "Yo, we made the Western Conference Finals last year. You're gonna be a good fit here." I think going to Portland, like, he's gonna like the team culture there, especially if they can get Whiteside out of there. I don't know. They have the contracts to match for him. I think you could do Bazemore for him straight up, salary-wise, and make it work. And then throw in, you know, a lottery-protected first or something like that. I just think
I love the idea. I just have this thing where if you have guys who are locked up in that sense and you don't really are projected to have a lot of cap space, then you might put an extra premium on guys who are locked up for a while. Like, if Gallinari was locked up for the next 2 years, I would love it, and I would have brought him up instead of Love. But, you know, I get what you're saying. Basically, you're buying yourself some flexibility in the summer.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that can't be a bad thing, and I agree with you. Like, they do have one of the best, you know, cultures in the league, so, like, they do have a strong card to play in that regard in retaining him. And maybe even if you can get him back at a cheaper price. I mean, there are a lot of ifs in there. Right. But if all of them, you know, materialize, then that would be the primary selection to go to.
Yeah. Right. I mean, because this year's free agent class sucks, so he's going to be one of the top targets. But there aren't many teams that can sign a guy to a max deal. And the teams that do have that kind of cap space aren't even like playoff contenders, much less title contenders.
Right.
So it will be difficult for, I mean, like, the Lakers are going to re-sign Anthony Davis. There's no question he's staying. So it's going to be hard for these top tier free agents. You're going to basically have to choose between money or winning. So acquiring a guy like Gallinari now, getting his bird rights, I think there's probably a room for a healthy compromise where maybe, like, it would not surprise me if he gets less than Kevin Love right now. Like, I think it's going to be hard for him to get a, you know, if you're saying like moving forward after this year, is Danilo Gallinari going to get 3 years, $90 million?
Oh no!
Yeah, just given the context of the market, I don't know that he will. I think it's going to be tough for him to find that. Maybe he wants to go to Atlanta. Like, Atlanta's going to have a ton of space. Memphis is going to have a ton of space. Cleveland will have a ton of space. The Knicks will have a ton of space. Maybe he wants to go back and be the king of New York again. But, you know, is he going to... Guy's 31 already.
31, yeah. He's going to be 32 next year. That's also one of the things. Like, you, if he's 32, do you want to retain him long-term? Like, maybe you do, like, a 2+1 deal or something.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think he is a better player than Kevin Love, and I think he's going to be probably cheaper than Kevin Love moving forward.
Would Gallinari also fit Milwaukee?
Yeah, Gallinari would fit any team.
This is true, but you know what I mean, like in terms of like, because I was like, I brought up the Brook Lopez concern,
right?
Like, he can play the Gallinari can play the four, and he can. Yeah, well, he started out as a three. I don't think he can play it like full time, mm-hmm. but he can play it in a pinch.
Yeah.
But then you just kind of move Giannis around because he's an alien.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, Basketball Reference's position estimates are very loose, so I wouldn't take this, take it with a grain of salt, I guess I should say. But in theory, last year with the Clippers, he played 57% of his time at the three. So this is the first year where he's played exclusively power forward.
Right.
And I mean, I think you're right. Like, that's the move going forward. I don't think you would want Gallinari as a three very much, but he can swing down to that position. Hell, he could even be a small ball five.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Not something you want to go to very often.
In a pinch, or like if when the situation demands it. So what's the deal if you move him to Milwaukee? Like, what do you do there? What's the deal?
I don't know. I think that's the problem with Milwaukee. It's like Eric Bledsoe is the one, or Brook Lopez, I guess, but why does OKC want him back?
Yeah, and Bledsoe is just such a non-starter because they already have like Chris Paul, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Dennis Schroeder, so...
Right. Yeah.
They don't really need another point guard.
Probably not.
No. But then again, like, you know, in terms of like the expiring contracts from Portland, like that gives them some cap flexibility.
Yeah. I mean,
they would definitely prefer that.
Portland, it's tricky because I think, like, if you're Portland, you obviously want to give up Whiteside more than Bazemore.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're very thin on the wing right now. Especially after Rodney Hood suffers the Achilles injury.
Who's also going to pick up, because of that injury, his player option. Presumably next season at $6 million.
I would think so, yeah. Yeah. So, at that point, you're relying on, like, maybe Gallinari's going to have to come in and play the three right away there. Or it's like Nasir Little and Mario Hezonja and Gary Trent Jr. Like, they did bring in Carmelo Anthony, so I guess that's the one thing if you're arguing they don't need a power forward, is you now have Carmelo and he's playing fine. Like, he's at least given them a lift. I mean, right now, for all of the concern about Portland, they're a half game out of the eighth seed in the West.
Right.
Now, that's in part because there are only six good teams in the West this year. Like, the eight seed right now is the 12-15 Sacramento Kings. So it's much like the East every year. It's kind of a race to the bottom. Like, I mean, there's just a whole cluster of teams. It's, you know,
Sacramento Kings. Right, and if they get Gallinari from Oklahoma City by just giving them expiring contracts, Oklahoma City's going to be worse. They're currently... Right. You know, in the seventh seed, so they're gonna like just drop down.
Yep.
Sacramento, I can't imagine is gonna finish the season with a higher record than Portland. I just can't.
Yeah, I mean, I think they are probably, they have the inside track right now, but like right now, there's a 1.5 game gap between the 8 and the 12 seed in the West. Yeah. So there's still plenty of time for Portland, even though they had a brutal start to the season. plenty of time for them to make up ground here.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. If I'm them, I'm calling OKC before Cleveland, at least.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. It's a fair point. I mean, Gallinari would always be preferable in terms of playing, you know, in terms of the player that he is.
Right.
And if they do, like, if Portland does value, like, the flexibility in the summer, then he's the right call.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Who else comes to mind, Mort?
Denver, but not in a necessarily buyer's way. I think, you know, we've talked about them before. Mm-hmm. And especially in terms of, like, consolidation trade.
Yeah.
They just need to do something. Again, I brought this up like 5 times on this podcast already, but I'm just going to bring it up again. Malik Beasley is going to be a free agent, and they didn't come to terms on a contract extension. It doesn't seem like there's a major role there for him moving forward. Like, he's playing 15 minutes a game,
right?
But he's a scorer, he's a shooter, he's a guy who's only like 23, so teams are going to take a look at him.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a pretty significant trade chip.
Yeah.
And I wonder, like, what you can get, if anything, from Gary Harris at this point.
Right.
I love his two-way game in that sense, but he's just not providing enough offensively because he's just dropped down the hierarchy so much.
Mm.
I want them to make a splash.
Yeah. If you're talking about Drew Holiday landing spots, Denver would be a very fun one.
That would be interesting. I mean, he would fit in defensively. Like, this is so weird for Denver, like, just having one of the league's best defenses and then being, like, ho-hum offensively. That was not the team I thought we would see this year.
No, not at all.
Drew would definitely solidify their defense. Like, right now, I'm not saying that their defense is a sham, but I am saying it's only been, what, 26 games that they played, so it could probably drop down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Drew would come in and just immediately stabilize that and make sure that that's legit. And he would provide a pretty good scoring punch as well. Like, he's a legit two-way player. He's not the automatic shooter that people thought he would be. But I think that's okay. Like, if he can get into the lane, he can draw fouls. Like, Denver are desperate for more free throws. Like, they shoot less than 20 a game. And he's an unselfish passer. He'll make the right reads. He's not going to overshoot it in the sense that, you know, oh, I'm going to come in and I'm going to take 20 shots.
Yeah. Right.
I like that. I like that. And if you play him at the one, you could actually move Jamal Murray over to his more natural shooting guard position.
Mm-hmm.
Where I will argue, though, that Drew has opened up a lot more being the shooting guard, but you can probably finagle that.
Or, I mean, those guys would be effectively interchangeable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
and with Jokic as well, like, he's basically the de facto point guard anyway, so.
Right. Yeah. I think, I don't know how you make it work necessarily. Like, I think Gary Harris is the one you send out for salary matching. You throw in Malik Beasley because he's young and you can, you know, he'll be a restricted free agent, so. New Orleans could at least have the chance to retain him this summer. I don't think those two guys alone, I could double check quickly. I don't think those two guys alone would be enough with salary matching, but you could throw in pick whatever fringe roster guy you want, or you could make it a bigger deal and include Mason Plumlee in there as well if New Orleans is trying to get off of. I don't think they are, though, right? They've got... No one jumps out to me as, like, an atrocious salary for them.
No. No.
Yeah, probably not. Maybe it's one more, but he's gone after this year anyway, so that doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, they don't have any long-term bad deals whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like, they've set themselves up financially pretty well.
Yeah. If the Nuggets didn't go after Drew, though, what types of guys do you think they should be targeting?
Well, I mean, it's just such a shame that Beal signed that extension.
I know.
He would have been just the perfect guy to go for there. But
yeah,
I don't know. I really don't know because it has to align with the situation of the trading team.
Right.
Like, it doesn't... Yeah, I can like, bring up a bunch of names, but most of them would be on winning teams. And then that's a moot point because winning teams are not going to relinquish some of their best players to give to another winning team. That's just not going to happen unless, right, you know, you just, it's a Godfather offer where you throw in four additional first rounders or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And Denver, it looks like they traded their, it's top 10 protected to OKC this year. Mm-hmm. That was for the Jeremy. They have traded their second round pick in each of the next 3 years already. But other than that, they have all their picks. They have no other picks incoming.
Right. So there was one guy I would have brought up, but his team is doing better this year. They're not in the playoffs, but they're doing better. So I think he's kind of off limits now, but that was Devin Booker.
Mm. Wow. Yeah, that'd be interesting if the Phoenix would even consider.
I don't think they would whatsoever, especially now. Like, he's better, even though his stat line, the raw stat line, is a little bit low compared to previously. Like, his efficiency is up. He's just playing smarter basketball.
Right.
So I don't think, like, he's even on the table right now, and they're winning a lot more than before.
Yeah. And I can't imagine the Nuggets.
No, like, I can't either, but he would have been a trade candidate had the Suns not, you know, taking this leap up.
Yeah.
So, like, that was one of the things I said coming into this season. I thought, you know, Devin Booker's not going to be a Sun. I didn't anticipate them being better. So, I mean, I'm definitely going back on that one.
Do you think at this point, like, what is Gary Harris's trade value?
I actually fear it's a little bit negative.
Yeah, right? Cause, I mean, he is the one. I mean, I guess Millsap could be too, because he's on $30 million expiring. So, like, if you're trying to add a high salary guy, he's the guy going out. But otherwise, Gary Harris is the third highest paid player on the Nuggets at $17.8 million this year, $19.2 million next year, $20.5 million in 2021-22. So he's under contract for 3 more years. You know, like, 2 years ago, the guy averaged 17.5 points on 48.5% shooting, 39.6 from three, almost 2 steals, in only 34.4 minutes. This year, he's down to 11 points on 41.8%, 35.7 from three. Like, his stats are just down across the board, basically.
Yeah, and he's not even taking remotely the same amount of shots either. His usage rate is at 15%, despite playing 32 minutes a night.
Yeah.
He's just not a part of the game plan. Right. So here's the thing. I said I fear that he has negative value. I would like to amend that for certain teams.
Mm.
This is not Gary Harris in the sense that what he would be on a different team. Like, let's say a team like Charlotte traded for him.
Mm-hmm.
I think he would immediately bounce back to being, you know, the 17, 18 point player. I think he's considerably more talented and more influential than what he's shown right now.
Right.
I think it's just becoming, well, I was about to say a bad situation, but that's probably overdoing it. I haven't read any rumblings about, you know, locker room issues or anything, but in terms of his career, I don't think necessarily this is the best move for him to stay with Denver. Mm-hmm. I think they too would be open for a trade if it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know who. I don't know what kind of trade partner is out there for him, because it would have to be a team who believes in him to the extent that they're going, you know what, we're going to invest $40 million in after this season. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, I agree that, like, his value isn't necessarily negative, but I think you're selling low on him right now if you trade him. And I agree with you as well that, like, he goes to another team where he's more of a focal point and he can get back to, you know, flirting with high teens scoring per game, if not 20 points per game. Like, he's a better scorer than what he shows. It just feels like he's basically, every time I watch Denver, you're right, he's just, like, not really part of the game plan. They just station him out in the corners or above the wing, and, like, if he gets the ball, he's going to shoot. Otherwise, you know, it's probably going to be Jamal Murray shooting or Nikola Jokic moping. Like, whatever weird thing is going on offensively in Denver, Gary Harris just is not part of the game plan as much as he was a few years ago. And it seems like that's had a negative impact on him, unfortunately. I mean, like, basically all of his stats are the lowest it's been since his rookie season, which is not the time. You know, last year he was not great because he was injured the whole year. And you got to wonder if are there some lingering effects from that going on as well. But, you know, for the Nuggets to hit their ceiling, they need the Gary Harris of 2 years ago, not what we've seen ever since then. So I agree that he's the guy, if you are going to make a move, if you're Denver and you're going to make a big trade, like, he's the guy that can move, and he's still so young that, you know, he's 20, he just turned 25 in mid-September. Like, a team like the Pelicans genuinely might be interested in him, thinking, like, all right, cool, we bring him in with, you know, our other young guys, Brandon Ingram, Zion, hopefully at some point. Like, in theory, this guy could really hit his ceiling here. Maybe our fast-paced system is going to be better for him. I don't know, but yeah, it's tough. I mean, Denver's
you said fast-paced right there.
Yeah,
I'm looking over the Rockets salary situation.
Ooh,
yeah, it's not great.
Uh huh.
I don't know if they can make it work necessarily.
Rockets or Pelicans?
No, the Rockets.
Oh, I was talking about the Pelicans.
I know. I was just, you said just, it was because you used the term.
Fast-paced, yeah.
Fast-paced. I was just like, the Rockets, man.
Yeah, but let's go into the Rockets then, because they're going to be the team that gets brought up routinely for the next month and a half, other than we'll get into the other one a little bit later. But here's my issue with the Rockets is, like, what do they have to trade?
Well, that was kind of my point. They don't really have a whole lot. I mean, you know, Eric Gordon is just, I think when we talk about value, that's a negative value.
Yeah, or that's a real sell low. That's for sure.
I mean, he's going to be 31 in less than a week.
Yeah.
And after this season, you're looking at a salary of 16.9. So essentially 17 million, then 18 million, then 19.5 million. And then the last year in 2023, 2024, it is a little bit different. Let me just go check.
That's a non-guaranteed.
Non-guaranteed. Okay, so he's up in 2023 because no one is going to guarantee that contract.
Probably not, yeah.
That's 3 years after this year.
Right.
At a lot of money.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I don't think you get something of significance there.
Yeah. And, I mean, they had Nene on that goofy, it's a $10 million deal with, like, most of it is likely bonuses, which they thought would boost his trade.
Right.
For salary matching purposes. But then the NBA said no. So he counts for $10 million for them, but is only $2.6 million in the trades. So he does not help a ton from a salary matching perspective. You know, they have P.J. Tucker, but you can't trade him because he's such a critical part of that team. After that, it's like Daniel House, who's earning $3.5 million. Ben McLemore is down at $2 million. So you can package a couple of these guys together, but you're not swinging for a Gary Harris or a Gallinari or a Drew Holiday at that point. You're more on like a Bogdan Bogdanovic or a Davis Bertans kind of thing.
Right, and this wouldn't even work for Denver because we're talking about like consolidation. They would just get a lot of like that. This doesn't consolidate, so it wouldn't even make that sense.
Yeah.
But Houston, I have such a hard time seeing what they can do unless they're willing to move Capella. But why would you?
Right. Yeah. I mean, again, I think their move was going to be you're going to have to go after someone smaller. And a Bogdanovic or a Bertans would help a ton because both of those guys are great. They're just underpaid relative to their performance. But neither of them will be underpaid after this summer. And then, you know, we were talking about this with Milwaukee earlier with the tax. That's the concern for Houston as well. Are they willing to pay the tax this year? And if you're acquiring a guy on an expiring contract, how willing is Tillman Fertitta to go into the tax moving forward?
I mean, only he knows. Yeah. I can venture a guess.
I can too.
Yeah.
And that, so are you going to give up considerable assets considering you already coughed up, you know, in the Westbrook trade, You already gave up your 2024 and 2026 first round picks plus your 2025 first round pick swap. You're already, you know, the future of your team is depleted as hell already. It's like, it honestly seems like Fertitta is operating it like he's going to sell the team in the next couple of years and he doesn't care.
Yeah.
Which might be the case. Like, maybe he's,
I think,
like,
the Rockets can only hope.
Yeah.
No, I mean, look, Morey is probably going to attempt something.
Yeah, of course.
Like, during the trade deadline, you know, there's going to be a Vogue tweet at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Going, Daryl Morey is trying to get, you know, insert star player right here.
right, definitely.
And we're going to hear the parameters, or we're going to be like, oh, that's insanely brilliant or something. But whether it materializes, I have no idea. Well, I mean, I guess Capella and Tucker are the two guys you could package in for something good, especially if you include, like, Daniel House. But again, if you go all in on the third guy, right, like, the lack of depth, it's just going to get worse.
Right.
Like, what can you really do from there?
Yeah.
You would have to play Westbrook, Harden, that third guy, hope that Eric Gordon bounces back and becomes, you know, playable again.
Right.
And that's it.
Yeah. It feels like Gordon, if they can somehow talk another team into taking Gordon on, that is their most tradable contract by far. But again, what value does he have? Positive value right now, knowing that he's coming off an injury. He played 9 games this year, shot 30.9% overall. His production has slipped in the last couple years. He's not getting any younger, has a long injury history. Like, good 3-point shooter, good high volume 3-point shooter. Gotta give him that. He shot 36% overall from 3 last year on 8.8 attempts per game. So he's gonna stretch the floor for you, but that's about it. You know, he's a 6'3 shooting guard. Like, not an elite defender by any means. No, he's not a 3-and-D guy, he's just a 3 guy.
Yep.
So are you willing to pay, you know, $16+ million a year for him for the next 3 years?
I mean, I'm not.
Right. So,
and, granted, you know, I don't have that money to throw around either.
That's true. And, like, you know, that Houston's already traded their 2020 and 2022 second round picks away. They don't have nearly as many picks as you would like for sweeteners. So,
right.
You're right. Like, the Rockets are going to be in trade rumors, and you're going to wonder how they pull this off. And maybe they do, maybe they don't. But just looking at their cap sheet and the picks they have and the young players they have, they just don't have all that much. I can't imagine them winning any bidding wars.
Right.
But I'm with you. They absolutely, I do not think they can win the title right now as currently constructed.
I don't either. I really don't either. I think they've painted themselves into a corner.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoy watching, on occasion, I enjoy watching James Harden play.
Sure.
I mean, there's definitely an intrigue to that team. And there's, like, because they have one of the top 5 best players in the league, there's always going to be a certain level that they can get to just solely off of that.
Right.
But championship is just not there. And that is the end goal for them, obviously.
Yeah.
Which means that they have to get better both depth-wise and, you know, at the top. They can't do both.
Yeah.
Like, you could actually trade Capella for depth, I presume.
I get,
maybe that's even the stronger play.
He's just on such a reasonable deal.
I love the deal, but that's why it's attractive, though.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm sure he has very good trade value.
Yeah.
But, like, then who? I guess you're getting you have to get a center back, because otherwise you're starting Tyson Chandler.
I know. No. Yeah. I mean, you can get a center back who is just not as good.
Right.
And then maybe a couple bench players who can play 20, 25 minutes a game.
Yeah. Yeah. Because right now, I mean, like, we were talking about Milwaukee. Milwaukee clearly has another level they can hit, because Giannis is playing, is leading the team at 31.2 minutes per game, which right. what he's putting up, though, the numbers he's putting up are already ridiculous. The fact he's doing it in 31 minutes a game is even more outrageous. Next on the team is Chris Middleton at 27.7 minutes a game. Like, they are clearly, they are running super deep, not trying to wear anyone out during the regular season, like, clearly have bigger goals in mind.
Yeah.
Houston, James Harden is playing 37.8 minutes per game. PJ Tucker, a 34-year-old PJ Tucker, is at 36. Russell Westbrook's at 34.8. Clint Capela's at 33.2. Like, they don't have another bullet in the chamber. This is it. They're not going to hit another level in the playoffs because you can't play James Harden. Sure, he could play like four more minutes a game, but like Giannis is going to go from 31 to 40. Harden's already at 38.
Yeah.
It's just a...
That's why I'm mentioning it. Like, yeah. They need someone who just to take on some of those minutes. It's just too much. Like, I think what Ben McLemore has given them offensively has been good. Like, yeah, he's been for sure. a reliable guard off the bench, and that's fine. And when Eric Gordon comes back, he can take some of those minutes off, but you still need more. You still yeah. need two more guys to fill out that bench. And if you have to sacrifice one starter to do so, to maybe get three players back who can just take up more minutes, then I think I would do it, even though I totally agree with you. I love Capela's deal.
Right.
I think it's very reasonable. I also think he's, you know, because of his great rebounding, you know, the Rockets would absolutely lose something because you're not going to get a center back who does that great of a job, mm-hmm. Who's a lesser player on the glass.
Yeah.
I just don't know what the deal is.
Yeah, I don't either.
I mean, obviously, Brook Lopez, ironically, would be great, but Milwaukee's not going to give that up because, like, they need their five men to stretch. So right, it has, right. you know, more room for Giannis.
Yeah, that would actually be interesting.
It would, and I defensively, I would absolutely love a Capela and Giannis front court.
Yeah.
And Middleton as well.
Yeah.
But offensively, I think it just crowds the basket a little bit too much.
Right, I would agree. Yeah, I can't think of anyone off the top of my head who would make sense. Like teams
it's a difficult one, but I'm sure there's something out there. The question is, like, what do the Rockets want to, you know, what do they want to? Do they want to improve the top-tier talent, or do they want to just create some depth? I'm hoping the latter, but I'm not sure.
Right.
Like, this is just a thought, right? You know, the Spurs right now also are in maybe a transitional, you know, period as well. Mm. Like, are there any of those guys you could bring on who might not have great value and who you could just unleash? Because while the Spurs are not necessarily a great team, it does feel like they have a lot of players who can, you know, play minutes in the NBA.
Right.
I don't know what the deal is, but...
They would end up trading for LaMarcus Aldridge.
I mean, look, LaMarcus Aldridge in Houston would jack up like 7 threes a game, and I'd be there for it.
But they don't have the salary again.
They don't. He's making $26 million. It would have to be. Let me just look up the Spurs salary, because one of the guys I was thinking of was actually Bryn Forbes. I know the Spurs love him, and I don't think that he's relinquished easily. But like, he's only earning like $2,875,000 this year. He's a free agent after this year.
Yeah.
But like, you're not going to convince the Spurs to give up like Jakob Poeltl, Bryn Forbes, and someone else for Clint Capela, I don't think.
Yeah, probably not.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it'll be really interesting to see if Houston can cobble something together, but it feels like they're kind of stuck.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Let's go into another team that will inevitably worm its way into trade conversations and then almost pull off a deal and then won't. The Boston Celtics, the Danny Ainge special.
Yeah.
They're 18-7 right now. So there's like basically every team is from 2-6 is within a half game of one another. It's still just super close throughout the East. Kemba's playing well. Jaylen Brown's been great. Tatum has been fine. Gordon Hayward just came back. So they're guards and wings. Good to go. Front court is dicey, especially now that Robert Williams III is out with the bone edema in his left hip is the term they are using. So they have basically Enes Kanter and Daniel Theis for the next couple weeks.
Please tell me you're leading up to actually suggesting a Jason Tatum deal right now.
Oh, no. No, I'm just asking in general, do they need to make a move to shore up their front court? Because we saw...
Yeah.
Like, they don't have an answer for Joel Embiid.
No, they don't. But look, what kind of answer are you going to get unless you actually get Al Horford back?
Yeah. Take him back for that terrible missed three at the end of the Heat game last night. We'll give it to you for Tatum.
Or get Aaron Baines back as well.
Like, right.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, Gasol, I guess. Like, you just want a guy who goes up against Embiid.
Yeah.
No, they do need another big. I mean, look, we just brought up Clint Capella.
That's true.
Ooh. What would that deal be?
I would think...
Capella for Smart?
Yeah, but how is that going to help Houston? You're just going to have a five-guard lineup?
I mean, Marcus Smart can guard one through four, yeah, I think.
That's true.
He would immediately give them like another defensive aspect that they don't have.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really solve their depth issue.
I mean, I guess you could do Smart plus one of these centers, whether it's how much Theis is at five million, Cantor's at about five. So yeah, Smart plus one of the centers.
See, Cantor would be interesting because he would put up some of the same numbers.
But like he much worse defensively.
Correct. It wouldn't be as impactful. But right. You know he can. Remember when I said you wouldn't find a guy who would be as great on the glass?
Yeah.
Cantor might actually be the exception.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
If you get Cantor and get something else, maybe that's the play. You move Capella for Cantor and a bunch of different things on Boston.
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't know that they would move. I don't think they would want to give up Smart. Like, Smart is the heartbeat of that team.
Right. I get that. Yeah.
And, you know, especially defensively, the combination of Marcus Smart and Clint Capella would be something else. So.
Would they be willing to give up Romeo Langford?
Why not? What has he given you this year? If you're thinking you're going to win a title this year,
He has one assist in 5 minutes played.
Right. But at that point, it becomes a salary matching issue for Boston. If you're not giving up any of the top five guys, and you're doing Cantor, you're going to have to cobble together at least like 3 to 4 of these smaller contracts.
Yeah, you will. Then you might have to include a third team, but then this is where it begins to go a little bit 2K-ish.
Right. And this is, I mean, really, like, as y'all are, like, sitting on trade machines and trying to cobble together deals this year, this is going to be the complication for a lot of teams. It's hard. It's harder than usual to match salaries because the bloated deals from 2016 are mostly off the books at this point. Teams aren't as desperate to offload salary or don't have as many guys on giant expiring deals. Portland is the one exception, but like more teams have cap sheets like Boston where it's like you're paying your top guys, you know, close to a 30% max, and then otherwise it's guys making less than $10 million a year.
Yeah.
So it's hard to match contracts for a Clint Capella type who's making a very reasonable $15 million,
it's a 16 point something, but like, yeah, that's very reasonable for a guy who pulls down 15 rebounds a game.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I'm going to see. Yeah, I mean, even Cantor, Langford for Capella is going to be, there's no way.
Yeah, you have to include Smart, but like you said, they might not want to.
Yeah, it's actually not that far off. They could take back 13.2. So yeah, they could include one other guy, Cantor, Langford, and you would have to do Poirier, Grant Williams, Robert Williams. Oh, Semi Ojeleye. Let's do it. I think this is gonna work.
That would be
no. Oh no, it didn't. Oh, it's so didn't... close. Oh, no.
Okay.
No. Yeah, $52,000 off.
So close.
Let's throw in. All right. Langford, Poirier, and Cantor works, though.
What about Grant Williams instead of Poirier?
Would they want to get... I mean, they're giving up two of their first-round picks this year.
Yeah, but you're still getting back Clint Capela. Back,
yeah, I mean, that's true.
Who's on a great deal as well. Like, it's not... I mean, this is... Now you're Danny Ainge. I don't want to give up.
I know. That's so true. No, that's actually... That could be a reasonable deal. Because for the Rockets, you're getting back three guys. Langford's not going to do anything for you this year. But Grant Williams is going to... Can move in and play right away.
Yeah, and he can play multiple positions. Maybe Langford gets a shot. I don't know. But then at least they would have maybe a potential trade asset down the line.
Right. And which they don't have now. You've added three players, so you're hopefully not... Maybe Harden's only going to play 36 minutes a night instead of 38.
Right. And Cantor can come in and like start as center. He will be abysmal defensively, but he'll give you like 15 and 12.
right. Exactly. Yeah, there might be something here that Boston could be... a team to watch for Capela, but in general, I agree with you that they're going to need some more help up front than what they have right now.
We're going to get so many Boston fans in our mentions, like, why would you give up Romeo Langford?
I know.
That one assist in 5 minutes, that was a great pass.
Right. Because you're getting Clint Capela back on a reasonable contract. This isn't hard, but Danny Ainge has brainwashed them all.
Yeah. So I have one final team to bring up. And before I do, I just wanted to mention something because there was something I forgot in regards to the Denver Nuggets.
Okay.
Jamal Murray's extension
takes
into effect next year.
Right.
So right now he has a cap hit of $4.4 million. Next year it's going to be $29.2 million.
Yeah.
Meaning that it might behoove them to make a move now when they have more flexibility.
Oh, yeah?
In that sense. Because right now, like, Mason Plumlee is on the books. Paul Millsap is on the books. They're not going to be after this year. Mm-hmm. They could conceivably re-sign Millsap. But at the end of the day, like, this is the time to do something. This is probably the best time to actually get another major contract on their books before Murray, like, takes up a whole lot.
Yeah.
And of course, they should be willing to pay the tax because it's the Denver Nuggets and they look good and they're winning. And they have Nikola Jokic. They should be going into the tax.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Again, I don't know what the deal is, but just one thing.
Yeah.
So the final team that I want to bring up, and I don't even think they should be buyers, but I think they're dumb enough to actually talk themselves into being that, and that's the Bulls.
Oh, God.
Well, I mean... They're 5-5 over the past 10 games. You could totally see themselves talking themselves into this.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're only two games out of the playoffs right now.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Ugh. I could see it. I could see them going out and just like making a lot of the youngsters available for, I don't know, DeMar DeRozan. No, but would it shock you, is what I'm asking. No,
it wouldn't shock me, but God, for your sake, I hope that doesn't happen.
it feels like it could happen. Like, maybe not DeRozan specifically, but like an in-prime player because they want to make the playoffs and sort of validate the hire of Jim Boylan so Paxton doesn't lose face so he can go out to the media and say, look, I hired Jim Boylan, he made the playoffs.
Right. Well, I don't want it. I'm not going to entertain the Bulls. But you're right. They are very dumb and impetuous, and they might do it. But there is another team in the lottery right now, well in the lottery right now, that does seem to be having some internal conversations, at least, about trying to add some help. And that's the Atlanta Hawks. Sham Sharania reported in early December that frustration has been mounting within the Hawks organization. And it resulted in an emotional locker room scene involving star point guard Trae Young following a recent loss. After a 131-18 home loss to Brooklyn, one high-ranking team official was seen telling Young that the team would be getting him help or some help on the roster soon, according to multiple sources. So John Collins, still suspended. I think he's going to be back in the next couple of games, so that's going to help a lot. but the Hawks have been just absolutely brutal. 6-22 on the year. They are the only team worse than them is the Golden State Warriors, who are starting a complete mash unit of players.
They just allowed 143 points to the Knicks. You could have just said that and you would have known, it's not great.
Right. So, and Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports reported yesterday that there's at least some conversation. Right now, head coach Lloyd Pierce is not on the hot seat, but frustration in the locker room has been building for some time. His teammates have complained to each other about selfishness, not putting in the necessary work, and players not being held accountable. It sounds like if the Hawks play an attitude to continue to erode, the heat on Pierce will start to rise. So
There are a lot of clubs right now that should be getting ready if Lloyd Pierce hits the market.
Yeah, I would think so. But, man, so the Atlanta Hawks at 6-22, you know, have been playing without their second best player for most of the season.
Right.
Should they be buyers?
No, they shouldn't. They should be smarter than the Bulls, perhaps.
Right.
I think it's pretty extraordinary that you have a sophomore guard basically just being, hey, I want to win right now. Come on, what the hell is happening? That only speaks to Trae Young's like competitive, you know, will.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty awesome in that sense. Like, he's not going all in on the whole, yeah, let me just hang around for the next couple of years and develop and let's get our guys in. Like, he's there. He's like, I want to win right now. Just give me all the W's right now.
Right.
I can definitely appreciate that.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be difficult to, you know, turn this particular season around. You're 6-22.
Yeah.
Presumably you're not going to make moves that turns you into like a 70% winning team. I don't know what the move is. I guess a center, Capella maybe. I don't know. I have a hard time seeing what's out there. I mean, they have some trade assets, but it's not like they're loaded. They don't have the treasure trove of draft picks that, you know, the Oklahoma City Thunder has, for example.
Yeah, they have a lottery protected first from Brooklyn this year.
Right.
Lottery protected first from OKC in 2020. But if that is not conveyed, it turns into 2 second round picks.
In 2022, you mean, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, it would turn into 2024 and 2025 seconds if it doesn't get conveyed in that one season. They owe their second-round pick to either Philly or Boston this year. So that's not great because that's probably going to be, you know, it's going to be somewhere in the 31 to 35 range. That's a very, very valuable second-round pick that they
It is. That's
have.
A high up. Yeah.
Yeah, and they owe their 2021 second to Brooklyn next year. So they do, I mean, they have a ton of seconds coming their way. It looks like 6 coming their way over the next couple of years. So they do have some draft assets, but, you know, when they walked in this year, they had 8 and 17 that they traded up for number 4 for DeAndre Hunter. They definitely don't have as many as they had a year ago. We can leave it at that. I'm with you in thinking that, like, there shouldn't be any urgency. They're not going to, like, make the playoffs this year. So I understand the frustration. And maybe, you know, maybe some of the guys aren't putting in the work that you need. I can only assume they're getting pretty angry at Cam Reddish already, who is shooting 32.6% overall this season. And, you know, came into the league.
He's improved.
Yeah, came into the league with some concerns just based on his underwhelming play at Duke, and those have only been confirmed so far. Plenty of time for him to turn it around, but definitely not the start you would like this season. I mean, Kevin Herter's missed a ton of time this year, too. Like, they've been without 2 of their 3 best players for a good chunk of this season, which obviously is not helping. You add John Collins back in, a guy who can average 20-10, and I think this Hawks... No, I don't think they were a playoff team either way, but I think they're much more competitive than 6-22.
Right.
So
they have $62 million coming off the cap. yeah. this year just off of three players in Chandler Parsons, Evan Turner, and Alan Crabb.
Right.
I just don't know. I'm not sure what the rush is right now, because when you have that kind of cap flexibility, and granted, it's not in a great free agency year.
Yeah.
Maybe it would be interesting to actually shop those three guys around for longer deals, like just 1 year longer.
Yeah.
I don't know. More. Maybe that's a dumb idea. But if you can, like, squeeze out some additional assets for those deals.
Yeah. For teams looking to dump long term deals.
Like, yeah. Well, at least for another year, like expiring no later than 2021, maybe. But.
But I think, is Atlanta going to be a major player in free agency in 2021?
I mean, they could be. Honestly, if Trae Young at that point is averaging like 32 points a game, and I'm not even going to rule that out.
Yeah, but he's still so bad defensively.
If we have learned anything about NBA players, it's that they look at scoring totals.
Right, yeah, that's true.
That guy can get buckets. Yeah, but he gives up twice as many buckets. Doesn't matter. He can get buckets. Yeah. He's my guy. He can score 20.
I just don't think they're going to take the strides they need to in the next year and a half that they are. I mean, if they're
that depends, right? That depends on what they get. Like, if they get draft picks here in 2020... because they're willing to give up like Parsons, Turner, and Crabb for longer term deals, and you suddenly have a young core with like, if you get like an additional three, maybe four, you know, somewhat high picks, and that turns into quality rookies, then that changes the perspective entirely.
But like, is a star free agent in his prime going to be like, oh cool, I'm going to go play with a bunch of early 20 somethings, and we're going to win right away?
You know what? Honestly, in this day and age, they might be. Maybe they look at the longevity of it and say, oh, okay, I actually have a lot of young guys next to me who are very, very hungry, so I can actually take a step back in the regular season and just kind of control things.
Yeah, it would be smart. I just don't know that I think players want to join other players in their prime.
Right. Yeah, and preferably from their draft class or a couple years before.
Right, which is, again, I mean, I'm with you, like, if I'm a player and I see like, oh wow, this team is set up really well for the future, I could go be the leader. Like, that would be smart, but I just don't think that's how most players are wired. Or if they do, if it's like LeBron going to Lakers last year, it's like, oh cool, they have a lot of prospects that I could eventually trade for a star more aligned with my age.
Right, that's another thing. But I mean, look at. I'm glad you brought that up, because LeBron, like, actively went after a guy who's like, what, 9-10 years younger than himself?
Yeah.
Fully recognizing, you know, he's in his prime. He can carry a lot of the load. And to his credit, like, that's exactly what Davis has done. So,
right.
I don't know. It's a problem that the 2020 free agency market is so shallow, because otherwise, like, these contracts would have been worth gold.
Right. Well, but I think you're right, or I think you're onto something, that they should, you know, with three big expiring contracts, like, call up. I mean, Cleveland, the problem with Kevin Love, like, they want something back in return, which,
right,
that's not great. But, like, yeah, if you can take on, like, Nick Batum, call up Charlotte and say, like, yeah, we'll take him on. Just give us a pick.
See, I did think about Charlotte. The problem here is I don't think Charlotte would be willing to give up an asset just for having 1 year, you know, for having Nick Batum on the books for one more year. And that's also why I come up a little bit short on that idea, because how much more would teams would they be willing to give up by just having a contract on the books for 1 year less?
How long is Deion Waiters' contract? Only one more year. Yeah.
Interesting. Like, but that's actually interesting, because there are teams that who are winning who have bad deals on their books.
Right.
Now, those are the ones that you should look at. Like, if you're looking for bad contracts on bad teams, I don't think you're going to get a whole ton, because the bad teams are kind of, they've accepted the fact we're going to be bad for a couple of years.
Right.
So we'll eat that salary that we have as long as we get high draft picks and all that. So we're not in the market of relinquishing potential draft aspects just for getting a better contract on the books.
Right.
So the Miami example is actually pretty good, because they're good. Like, they're third in the East right now at 20-8.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned Deion Waiters, and you said, like, he had another year going?
Yeah, he's through 2020, 2021.
All right. And then you have James Johnson as well, who's not playing.
Yeah, correct.
I mean, that's dead money, and he has a player option for next year as well at $16 million.
Yeah.
Miami would probably want to get out of that. So if they could move, like, James Johnson and Deion Waiters, that's $28 million right there, mm-hmm. for, like, Chandler Parsons.
Yeah.
What would they be willing to give up for that?
Yeah, that's a fair... I mean, it sounds like we agree that the Hawks should be in no rush to, like, add win-now players, and instead, right. like, this is the type of thing they should be shopping their expirings and, you know, be willing to rent out their cap space, because, as you said, the free agent class sucks this year.
Yeah.
Like, again, sure, you could spend it on a 32-year-old Danilo Gallinari, but he's going to help you for the next couple of years, I guess, and then, I don't know, I mean, all of your guys are just so young. Like, continue... I don't want to say it, but, like, trust the damn process. Like, you've got a good foundation here.
Yeah.
Like, just don't feel the urge to rush it just because you got pounded by the Knicks. I know it was embarrassing, but, like, in a couple of years, you can see this team being very good. They just need to... It's going to hurt for a little bit longer.
Also, the Miami Heat is probably out because I just looked at their draft pick situation.
Oh, yeah. It's not good.
That's not great.
No.
Their 2021 is gone, so they can't trade.
This year.
The 20th. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, 2023 first-round pick is going to Oklahoma City.
Right.
Or protected, at least. So,
yeah.
So, in terms of draft picks, that's not great. Like, nope. What would you give? You would have to give up, like, a good player.
Yeah.
Like, Tyler Hero or something. But, like, are you willing to do that? No. I don't think so. No,
I wouldn't think so either. I think that's a good place to wrap up. So we will do the other side of this, barring any breaking news. We'll do the seller side in our next episode. In the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we are now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian.